Let's talk. John Brown.
Big Guy, the true story of Britain's most notorious bouncer. This tells the story of Marcus Redwood, widely known as the UK's most notorious nightclub doorman over a career spanning around 40 years. He's had an estimated 3,000 fights on the doors of clubs and pubs in southern England and knocked out approximately 1,000 men. With a background like that, you might say I'm very, very pleased that we're doing this on the end of a Zoom link. However, I think we can hopefully apply the title Gentle Giant to my next guest. He is the big guy. He is indeed Marcus Redwood. Marcus, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Whereabouts are you, by the way? Where do we find you on God's green earth this morning?
I'm in my house in Ramsgate, Kent.
Marvellous. Now, for those who kind of don't know, this is a sort of... People will go, oh, for goodness sake, it's another one of these, I'm the tough guy, I'm the big man sort of books. There was that tremendous and bleeding awful period of time when everybody was claiming to be a Mockney and everybody thought they had, I don't know, everybody thought they had, Frankie Fraser's number on their speed dial and they knew him from Marbella. This book isn't like that, is it, Marcus?
No, it's not like that at all. I'm not trying to glamorise that side of it. I'm just trying to explain a journey that I suppose I went on for most of my life. I got thrown into something quite early. Wasn't planning on being a doorman even. I was actually a qualified tree surgeon.
Right, okay.
I was brought up on a little farm and the door thing just happened by accident. I just happened to be in a pub when I wasn't really old enough to be in there, actually. And a big fight broke out, and I sort of broke it up, threw the people out, walked back in, dusted my hands off, and the guy that owned the pub went, "You're here every week." He said, "If you do that, I'll give you free beer." I was like, "Great,
okay." Yeah.
You know, so that was my first sort of. I didn't even think of myself as a doorman. I thought this is handy. I'm going to get free beer every weekend, you know. But it ended up that I had a nasty motorbike crash after that,
right,
and ended up in hospital for a few months. And I was told I wouldn't be able to walk properly, or I'd never be able to do sports, never be able to ride a motorbike, all sorts of things that they told me I couldn't do. So when I came out, I started training in a gym, and the gym I trained at, there was a load of big doormen who actually trained in the same gym. So as I was getting sort of bigger and stronger and back to health, I popped in where they were working. And they invited me up to this bar in Margate called Green's Wine Bar. And the same sort of thing happened, you know, a couple of fights kicked off and you couldn't stand there and just watch them get involved and not do anything. So I got involved and it turns out I was quite good at it. So next thing you know, I get offered a job now and again doing odd shifts with them. And it sort of grew from that, really. And then the money I was making, per night then was, I mean, I think in three nights a week, I was making more than my normal day job for 40 hours.
Right.
So for a while I did the both. I mean, it didn't take me long to figure it out that I could make a lot more money, just working as a doorman. Of course, everyone, you know, warned me against it. There's no future in that and all this. And I always wanted to own a gym.
Yeah.
So I carried on anyway, but I ended up getting my gym. Which was one of my lifelong ambitions at the time. Well, I was only about 26 then. But then in the end, after a divorce and that sort of got taken away from me in the divorce, lost my house, ended up in a bedsit with nothing. And in desperation, I looked around at what I had and I thought, do you know what? I am a pretty good doorman and I know a few people. I'm going to start an agency. So I started an agency from my bedsit with just a mobile phone. And it grew from that to a company that sort of lasted for over 30, well, it's still going now, but I had it run that company for over 30 years and I had over 200 staff. And it was quite, you know, quite a big security company. And it's still to this day, I sold it to a friend of mine and he still runs the same company. So I still see my logo walking around and
yeah
they're doing all sorts of security work now.
Here's the thing, and it may be a spoiler in the book, but the book is called Big Guy. I mean, obviously we can't do it on radio because it doesn't work, but I'm not saying that you're not at your prime now, Marcus. I said very respectfully, but you know, how, I mean, what was, if you'll pardon the expression, you know, what dimensions are we working here, Marcus? I mean, this is from a guy who's 73 kilos and 168 centimeters centimetres tall. So that's what you're working against, okay?
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. I'm a lot older now and I'm a lot smaller, but back in the day, I was 6'2". And at my heaviest, I was about 19 and a half stone, but not a blob.
Yeah.
I was a 19 and a half stone lump with abs.
Yeah.
I did a few bodybuilding competitions along the way. Wasn't a great bodybuilder, but, you know, I got a few trophies. And, and it just made my job a lot easier when I was a lot bigger and stronger. For one, the deterrent factor, you know, I don't care how drunk you are, if a 6'2", 19 stone guy comes over and says you've got to leave, you sober up pretty quick and go, yeah, okay. You know, and if not, and I do have to remove you, then it's quite easy for me to do that as well.
You see the thing, Marcus, I am so glad that we're having this conversation now, because literally 20 years ago when I was a drinker, I would have been your worst. I mean, I wouldn't even got past you, but I was that worst sort of, no, it's okay, I know the manager, or, you know, I remember I was in Leicester Square in a place called Little Havana, and the bouncer saw me and he obviously knew that I was completely, and he said, would you come with me, sir? Just walk with me. I was like, yeah, that's a very good idea. And I didn't realise that he was walking me to the fire exit. Yeah, and you know what came next, don't you? Straight through.
Night.
Yeah, good night. Exactly. Well, you're laughing now, but yeah, had to walk all the way back through London with, because I'd left my jacket in the club as well. I'd go back the next day and fix it. I mean, did you used to get that sixth sense that you, because it's not about confrontation. It'd be very easy to say it's like, you know.
Do you know, it's one of those jobs. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people out there that hate doormen because they've got this sort of stereotypical, you know, the bouncer, the bully boy, the drug dealer, all of that shit. And I'm very aware of that. And I really did my best to do my job fairly, properly. And a lot of my best friends, even now, are people I initially might have thrown out of a club because I always tried to do it the right way. It wasn't always possible. And I'm not saying I was an angel, but yeah, I like to think I'd done the job properly. I was there to make sure that all the nice people, and let's face it, 97% of the people in the club are probably nice people they've worked hard all week. They want to go out. They want to spend some money, have a great time and forget about their worries. And they don't want some drunken idiot or a bully boy or a thug coming up and causing them or their girlfriend a problem. You know, so my job was A, not to let those sort of people in. And if they did get past me, then to try and control it. Like when you said that doorman ushered you very quietly over to an exit. He could have just, you know, grabbed you, dragged you through screaming and kicking, but he didn't. He went, follow me. And you did. And so no one else probably even knew you'd left the club. You know what I mean? You're outside. You go, oh, shit, what happened there?
Yeah.
Right? So the job's done. You'll probably go back next week because you didn't have a confrontation, and you'll go, hello, mate, I remember you. You're right, you're coming in this week. You know, and you're now, you've got more of an understanding as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, I remember going down, because I used to, like stumble up and down the King's Road, and there were a couple, there was like, Roberta's at the top, and there was one, the 151, horrendous place. But you knew the doorman, and it was part of the experience. So it wasn't, the doorman was not somebody to, the bouncer to be, oh, I've got to get past the doorman. It was like, you know, how are you doing? He'd check you out, everything would be fine, and a lovely evening. Yeah. Obviously, you've kind of seen the business change as well, transform, I suppose.
Oh, massively. Yeah. I mean, when I first started working the doorman, there was no licenses. There was no, I mean, in those days, there was no uniforms. There was no radios. There was no metal detectors. There was nothing. You literally, the pub would employ the toughest guy they knew who would do the job. And sometimes venues then, I mean, one of the venues I work called the Ace of Clubs, it had a pub downstairs and then a little club above it. And we only had two doormen to run the pub and the club, right? And, you know, there was a changeover period where the pub downstairs would still be open. The club upstairs would open, say, at 10:30. But there'd be this hour switchover where there'd be only one of you upstairs. And in Margate, this was. So in Margate, on a Saturday in the summer, you would get 70-odd coach parties coming to the town. And in those days, it would be full of football thugs, you know, before the rave days in the 80s. Yeah. And so you had these massive coach parties trying to get in, and you'd be on your own upstairs, shitting yourself, quite honestly. And then the guy downstairs on his own would be on his own as well, trying to clear the pub full of idiots out. And again, you've got no communication with each other. You know, sometimes a barmaid would run up or down and go, there's trouble, you know, and you'd have to run up or down the stairs and back your friend up. But Nowadays, that same venue would probably have 6 to 8 door staff. They'd all have radios. They'd have metal detectors. They'd have cameras. They'd all have to have a license, you know, just to run the same venue that probably 2 of us did back then.
Did you sort of get a sixth sense? Because I'm just thinking, I mean, obviously, as you can tell, you know, I'm off, well, you can tell even with this, but, you know, I've got no idea about how to be a bouncer or of security or whatever. But do you get this sort of sixth sense if you were running downstairs when they said there's trouble? Could you make that split-second decision? Because, you know, your senses were so that you knew what was going on within literally a minute. I would go, what's going on, whap, and you would know what's going on and you know how to react. I'd be lying on the floor burbling in some strange language whilst you would have got everybody out the pub and be smiling at you.
The thing is, it's like anything. The more you do something, the better you get at it, you know. I mean, and although they teach door courses nowadays, and I've recently just sat in on a door course. In fact, I'm just training to be an instructor for a security company at the moment so I can actually teach the doorman. And the thing is, when you're a young doorman, even nowadays, when you do this course, it does give you a lot more insight than what we had in those days. But it still doesn't prepare you for what you're going to get, what you're going to come up against. But the more you do anything, the better you get at it. I mean, when I very first started working in the Ace of Clubs, I would walk over to some guys and I'd sort of walk over, you got to leave, guys. And I'd get a punch in the mouth before I'd react. You know what I mean? So you very quickly learn. You start to identify body language, tone that someone's speaking in, even the way they're breathing when they talk to you, the position their body will turn into, whether they're on defense, whether they're going to attack you. So you get very good at reading people, you know, and you also get much better. You also get much better at dealing with people and knowing how to communicate to them. I mean, because that's a lot of it. It is a communication job. I mean, you've got to be able to go over in a few split seconds and either suss somebody out or a situation out and try and get the best resolve to it, right? And that comes from experience. You know, that's something that you just don't learn on a door course, really.
I mean, a lot of people have been sort of, we went through that whole sort of Guy Ritchie Mockney sort of phase where everybody was saying, oh, yeah, I was friends with, you know, Mad Frankie Fraser and, you know, Freddie Foreman, et cetera, you know, all this sort of rubbish. And they were all saying they were from, like, you know, the old Kent Road and they were, in fact, from, you know, Surrey or something. There's an awful lot of people running around going, I was this and I was a bare knuckle champion. And we you know, there was a plethora of books like that. And it's all very 2D. And what interests me about your book, I mean, you found yourself in a bedsit and came back from that. And that's interesting because people would say, oh, well, I use my fist to get, you know, if we were doing the Guy Ritchie movie, you know, I use my fist, but you used your brain and, you know, you didn't result to criminality. Because a very good friend of mine who was on the other side said to me one time, late night in Marbella, he said, you know, Giles, a criminal is somebody who can't make it in the real world. And that's always stuck with me. Because this was a guy who was quite, you know, quite well known at this point. And he was like, you know, and he said, oh, you know, I've got the greatest respect for people who can actually do it on the other side of the law and have a comeback.
Well, the thing is, one of the things when you're doing this job, especially when you're running a huge security company, and I was working, I had tons of different clubs and pubs and working all through Kent and Sussex. And I actually got to meet, obviously, you have to meet loads of the, every town's got a local hero. Every town's got its local drug dealers. Every town's got its local bullies. So when you work in so many different areas, you've got to build this, you've got to build up a reputation for yourself, which sometimes may be even bigger than what you really are. But it makes life a lot easier. And I rubbed shoulders with, I mean, some of the biggest villains that have ever been. And I'm not saying that to try and impress anybody, but I just want to impress upon you that see, the police looked at me like I was a known associate of Dave Courtney in London. I visited Reggie in prison because we were helping to organise his security for his brother's funeral. So I visited Reggie 3 times, but I wasn't a criminal. What I did was I run a security company, and that's what he wanted. So, and then you've got, I mean, I met, because of knowing Dave, I met Frankie Fraser, Freddie Foreman, you know, Tony Lambriano.
Yeah.
You know, and they were, listen, it was fantastic. I enjoyed every second of it because I got to meet some of these living legends and actually sit down with them and have a cup of tea and a conversation. You know, it was amazing. But I wouldn't say, I mean, I was a boy when they were active.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was probably in my 30s when I met them. I'm now in my 60s. You know, but I had the utmost respect for them, and I used to love listening to some of their stories.
Yeah, because they do have stories. As long as you, as I said, you don't go try and be full and trying to impress them, because these people don't need really impressing, do they, to put it mildly?
No, I was always, I mean, I remember sitting down with Freddie Foreman and it was very surreal. It was like sitting down with my dad, basically. And I was at his house having tea and biscuits. And he was telling me how he disposed of the bodies and wrapped them up in chicken wire and weighted them down so that no one found them. Which is, you know, such a weird conversation to have with someone, you know, that, you know, you've just met.
He had, because I'm talking to you from Marbella, okay? And he had, in the 80s, they had a bar country club and he was living here before he was pulled back to the UK, and it was called Eagles. And my parents used to drink in there, right? And one day my mum walked in and Freddie came up to her and said, you know, they said, Sally Brown, lovely to meet you. I've heard so much about you. And that shocked my mother so much. She talked about it to the, you know, but absolutely charming, as the saying goes.
Oh, a real gentleman, yeah.
So when it comes to writing this one, then, what was the spark? Why did you decide that you needed to put it all down on paper? Did you have a thousand tales and thought, I need to get this down?
What it was, I've always, for the last 30 years, I've always wanted to do a book. And many of my friends have said, yeah, I need to do a book. But actually trying to get a book put together, I'm not the perfect at my English or writing or anything like that. But I'm okay. But what happened was I got a podcast. I got an offer of a podcast from Dodge Woodall. He interviewed Dave Courtney and Carlton Leach, and like a joint interview with them. And at the end of the podcast, he actually said to them, is there anybody you've met over the years that you wouldn't want to cross? And they both looked at each other and they said my name. So Dodge Woodall went, I need to meet this guy. So he contacted me, asked me if I'd do a podcast, and the first podcast I did with him, which is still on YouTube now, has done over 500,000 views, which was, you know, pretty good. So it went really well. I was better at doing the podcast than what I didn't realise I was going to be any good at it. Apparently I talk for England.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got contacted by a guy called Mark McLaughlin from Manchester, and he sent me a message, and just, I used to read all the messages, right? I'm a bit of a nut like that. So anyway, this message said, you need to do a book. And I wrote back and said, yeah, I've always wanted to do a book. And he said, well, I'm an author and I'll do it. So I was like, how much do you charge? He went, nothing. I'll do it for free. All right. He said, right. I just want to do. He said he's an author who'd written books about tax. Right. He'd written six books.
Right.
So he's a published author, but never done this sort of genre. So he said, look, if you trust me, he said, I'll write the book for you. We'll work on it together. So he transcribed a lot of the podcasts that I've done in the last couple of years, which was about 8 or 10 podcasts, because they basically had all the main stories in it. And then we sort of edited the book together twice. Then I edited it on my own twice. And then he found me an agent, and the agent found us Mirror Publishing, and it all just went from there. And so now we've got this, you know, finished product, which is a, you know, pretty good book.
What was it like when the first copy dropped into your, you know, through your letterbox and that?
I'm sort of blown away. I still can't believe it's real, actually, that I've actually got a book and I'm now a published author. arborist and an author.
Yeah, exactly. Also, an arborist and an author. Yeah, there you go. The two A's. True, yeah. Because it is, again, it's not the I was a bare knuckle fighter or whatever, or, you know, I was a tough man book. So what are you hoping? Is it people want to read it? Because A, there's so many great stories there, and B, they might look a bit differently on the industry, and C, it is about how you've come back, you know, and you know, you've kept true to yourself, Marcus.
Well, there's another big underlying story, which I've been trying to push, because once I started getting this sort of, I like the name Big Guy. I didn't make that up for myself. I didn't call myself the Big Guy. I'm Marcus. But everyone in my area started calling me Big Guy. And then one of my friends found a number plate that said Big Guy. So I bought it. So I drive around in a car that's got Big Guy on it. So now everyone calls me Big Guy. Now, when I went to, now I discovered Thailand 23 years ago when I was doing really, really well with my business and making lots of extra money. And I started doing charity work out there. Just very quietly, just raising money, going into orphanages, helping out Street Kids Refuge and doing all this sort of work. And what happened is I've been doing that for 23 years nonstop alongside my security work. But it was something that not everyone really sort of knew about. And now I'm sort of more or less semi-retired and I've got a bit more time on my hands. And I wanted to, I wanted to try and do more in that area of my life, right, and push that charity on a bit further. So when I started getting this as a platform, if you like, right, with the podcasts, if you start off from the very first podcast with Dodge, I think I don't mention it or hardly mention it, but it gets mentioned more and more and more. And this book has enabled me also to mention it more in the book. So I suppose what I'm really trying to do is, obviously, I want people to be entertained by reading the book, because there are some funny stories, some naughty stories, some very nasty stories. But also, there's the other side where I get to actually talk about my charity work, which is something I want to expand upon. I mean, when I go back this year with my wife, who's from Thailand, by the way,
right?
When we go back in November, you know, every year we go back, we put on a huge day out for orphans. We invite, last year we had over 500 orphans come out to the beach. We pay for the buses, the food, the drinks, the ice creams. And it's all funded by donations and friends that have known us over the last 20 odd years. But what I want to do is I want to do more work out there. And to do more work, I need to make more people aware of it and get their trust. I've managed to set up with Lloyds Bank a community account. So it's actually called Big Guy Charity.
Right.
I've got a Facebook page, if anyone wants to look at it, which is called Big Guy Charity. You can see what we do. We don't take any expense. We don't take anything for expenses. I run it completely like profit free. It's a non-profit organisation, and we help loads and loads of children in Thailand, loads of poor people.
And when you're looking at, like, 500 kids, 500 orphans, having a great time on a beach in Thailand.
It's amazing.
And then you look back at where you started, you know, with the greatest of respect, Marcus, you must think, what a ride this has been. You know, if you said to this 16-year-old you, who was doing it for free beer in a pub in Ram, you know, I'm approaching 60 myself, but, you know, and say, oh, in a half a century's time, you're going to be standing on a beach watching 500 kids that you've done this for, you would have gone, hey, what, you know?
Yeah, it's quite mad. Yeah, it's quite mad. So, I mean, there's been two very different sides to my life, you know, because, I mean, at one point, at the peak of my time, I was getting death threats, I was getting shot at by gypsies, I was getting people trying to run me over outside the clubs and stabbed, glassed. Yeah, you know, I've had all that side of it, but at the same time, on the other flip side of it, I was on my downtime, I was out there raising money for kids, in, you know, underprivileged kids.
It's a wonderful, it's a wonderful tale. It's a wonderful book. The book is called Big Guy, the true story of Britain's most notorious bouncer, but also a bleeding nice guy, ladies and gentlemen. Just give me the charity one more time so that our listeners can go forth, check it out and hopefully donate, and we can see what you're doing. So where's the easiest place to find the charity, first of all, Marcus?
Right. Well, the charity is on Facebook. So if you just go into Facebook and put down Big Guy Charity, that's it.
Brilliant. And the book itself is going to be available from our own virtual bookstore. The book, so just click on the rather attractive photograph on the front cover, and it will be winging its way to you. The book is called Big Guy. It's by Marcus Redwood. Marcus, it's been an absolute eye-opener, an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And I'm so glad you didn't go, hey, I remember you from that nightclub 30 years ago.
Marcus, that's been brilliant. Thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on the radio.
Come back again, Marcus. You're a brilliant guest. Marcus Redwood, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.